This is the mini-seminar entitled The Role of a Minister. This is May 2nd in Capitol, California, with our new ministers, Barbara Rich and Esther Tresser. So, the first topic of our four-topic mini-seminar is entitled Ordination. Ordination is a very special thing that is happening in the lives of people, and it really happens once in the life of every person. It happens once in the life of every person because only once is each person born on this dimension. And when you're born on this dimension, you are ordained as a divine being. Now, your ordination as a divine being is being said to you by your inner self, and then the world is doing its very utmost to prove to you or to make you believe that you're not a divine being. The world is working on you to prove to you that you are a human being. And most human beings fall for it. They believe that they are a human being. But at birth, not at the moment that your seed and the egg got together, but at birth, you have made the decision to be ordained. You are ordained as a divine being, and you know it. You know that you are number one. You know you're the creator of your world. You know that everything you want, you speak your word for, so to speak, and the world jumps to give it to you. You know that you are a divine being. You know that you are very, very special. You know, when you close your eyes, the world ceases to exist. And when you open your eyes, you create the world. You create it. And it becomes a very wonderful, dynamic, forceful activity. Now, you think that ordination is when we say that we are ordained as a minister of a particular church. But that's not really true. That is merely a continuation ordination. Our original ordination is when we are ordained as divine beings. We are ordained as perfect, wonderful beings, living in our ideal spirit, mind, and body, being in every way a fulfilled being. Now, from the moment we're born, we have a tendency to go away from that original idea of who we are. And perhaps when we are ordained later in our lives, we are returned to our original purity and integrity. We are returned to our original divinity of thought. We are returned to the idea that all is divine. For what is an ordination but a recognition that all is divine? Now, we think that when we are ordained, that we are ordained as a minister, that we are ordained to minister unto other people. And that, again, is a misnomer. We are not ordained to minister unto other people. We are ordained to minister unto ourself and our creation. We are ordained to minister unto our thought, unto our creation, the people that we bring forth, the ideas we bring forth, the concepts that we bring forth in our world. And then we are not only ordained to that, we are ordained to the maintenance of what we have brought forth. Now, in the first chapter of Genesis, in the Bible, it says, God created everything and called it good and very good. Now, our creation is good and very good also. Did God make any mistakes in the Bible's creation story? And no. Although mankind did their very first humanistic act in creating man as a naughty man, creating Adam and Eve as being disobedient children, wanting to eat from the apple from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and thereby be equal to the total divinity. In our infancy, it is best that we don't know all that is, you know, the power of good and evil, the apple of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It's best we don't know that, because then we believe that we should be looking at is the evil side as well as the good side. Whereas when we are created by ourselves, when we're created in our infancy, we know only good. We have no idea of evil. We have no idea of evil in any way or shape or form. We only know good. But our human world will do its utmost to teach us about evil, teach us about limitation, teach us about the problems. If we can be raised by very special parents, parents who themselves live in the consciousness of good, live in the consciousness of their original purity and integrity, then we are very blessed indeed. However, very few people are raised that way. But all people, every human being upon the face of the earth, knows intuitively and instinctively that everything is good and very good. They know that they don't know a bad person. They know that there's not a person existing anywhere who is evil. They know that intuitively, but they keep reaffirming that there is evil. They keep reaffirming that there are people who violate the laws and drive faster than they should on the freeways. People who violate the laws and go and rob banks and take money that doesn't belong to them and do things that they shouldn't do. And as we create people doing this, we do our very best to make sure that everyone else is aware of that. And so we put out publications and newspapers and magazines, radio and television, and on them we have stories of the incidences that happen in, say, 1/100 of 1% of the population. When you have a population of 6 going on 7 billion people, and you have as few incidents of violation of the law as you have, it is indeed the very most minority of the minority. But because we give it such great press and we speak about it so highly, we make it sound like everybody's doing it. As my father would often say to us 5 kids, he says, "I don't care if the rest of the world's going to hell, you're not. You're not going to do things that I feel are inharmonious with your highest good." He didn't say it that way, but that's what he meant. He was a very stern, Germanic father, very disciplined. He didn't speak much, but when he spoke, the rooftop trembled, and we followed his direction. My mother, when she spoke, we loved her very much, and she would chase us all over the house. And that was just part of the game. But when we stopped and talked to Mom, she would not say we were bad children. She would just say, "Are you proud of what you've done? Does that make you happy? Do you think you'd like to tell your father about what you've done when he comes home? Do you think it's going to make his day happy, make him feel good about coming to his family in the evening and having that sort of difficulty?" Well, once or twice saying that to us was sufficient. And we learned the lesson. We learned the lesson of being good. We learned the lesson of following the principle. We learned the lesson of everything that is fantastic and beautiful. We learned that lesson. Now, when did our ordination take place? When did our ordination come into being? Well, we were able to be ordained at birth as everyone is, and our parents helped us stay that way to a high degree. Now, did your parents help you stay that way to a high degree? I would say yes. And the reason they helped you stay that way to a high degree and that you know it is that you're the type of person you are. You're the person who is looking for the good in the world. You are looking for peace in the world. You're looking for all these things that are your original purity and your original integrity. And this is what a minister does. A minister does not look at people as something to be changed. A minister does not look at a person as something to be improved. A minister does not look at a person as somebody who has a problem. A minister only looks at a person and sees in them their divinity, sees in them their purity, their goodness. If a minister looks at any person and sees a problem, the minister sees his own or her own problem. And this is why when we are ordained, it means that we are ready to release looking at the world's problems and begin looking at the world's solutions and the joy in the world. This is a great and a wonderful privilege. It's something that doesn't come to everyone. How many people do you know in the entire world who are ordained as ministers? You say, well, there's a lot of Catholic priests and Baptists and Methodists and Islamic and Hindu and people of every variety. Yes, 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 yes. But add up their numbers. Add up their numbers. And how many do you have? Even with our dear friend who runs the $5 church here in California. You send them $5 and they send you an ordination and make you a bona fide minister and you can have your own church and you can be tax exempt. But even with him and his thousands of people that he does it, you know, as ludicrous as that may be, how many ministers are there in the world? Let's say there's 1 million ministers in the world, and wouldn't you say that's a nice number? A million, or maybe 2, or 3, or 5, it doesn't matter. But I'd say 5 million ministers on earth. Out of 7 billion people, how much is 5 million ministers? It's a drop in the ocean. It's nothing. Now, 5 million people who have convictions, which may be good and may not, according to our point of view, but these are people who have spiritual or religious convictions, and they want to share that with other people. Now, that's not very many out of the total population. Now, take the total number of churches. If you have 5 million ministers, you might have maybe, let's be generous and say, 1 million churches. And quite likely there's 1 million churches. How many cities do you think there are on the face of the earth? And there are not as many as you think. But how many cities and little hamlets and little places, each having a church? And they don't all have ministers, but each has a church. And in Moscow and New York and Chicago, Los Angeles, they have hundreds and hundreds of churches. Hundreds. But even those, you can go through the telephone book, and there are only a few pages of churches. You follow me? There's only a few pages. You think, oh my goodness, there'd be so many churches in Los Angeles with a city of so many million people. Well, they're not. They're not. There, you go through the telephone book, and most of them have telephones. Very few churches don't have telephones. But and let's add another 200 or 300 that don't have telephones, you know. But take them and add them together. There are not many. So when you join the ministerial group, when you are ordained a minister, you are joining a very elite group of people. First, you're joining people who believe they have a message. They have a calling to give to people. They have a reason to go out and say to people that they are beautiful or they're sinners. And those who go around telling other people that they're sinners, just imagine the kind of life they lead. They must have the most sinful lives of anyone, because we cannot call somebody anything that we are not. And if how many of the ministers go around calling the people good and uplifted and wonderful? Not enough, that's for sure. But those who go around seeing the good in others, they are doing what Jesus said. They are following the way of the Christ. And in every church, in every religion, there's always this story, and it says, at Christmas time, be very careful. For whatever you do for another person, you may be doing it for the Christ. You may be doing it for Jesus. So you want to do your very best. You want to give your very best. So that means every little child that comes along with a need, you instantly go. When you see a little child peering in the store looking at a choo-choo train, a train, and you know he wants it, you say, son, come on in, I'll buy that for you. You know, anybody who needs it, you give it to them, right? Now, why don't you do that? Don't you realize that this is what the teaching of the church is, that any one of these could be the Christ in disguise? And you do what for that child? You do what for that person?
See the Christ in
them. You see the Christ in them?
Yes, and that's it.
Or do you see the Christ in yourself?
Yes.
And then you see in them a fulfilled, joyous being.
Right.
Now, let's just go back to our statement of a while ago. There now is peace on earth, and it began with me. How can there be peace on earth when on earth there is war and conflict? Well, because it begins in our heart. In our heart, Ellen, can you visualize a gentle meadow with green grass?
Right.
Sylvia, can you visualize a peaceful ocean?
Yes.
Barbara, can you visualize the wind of the desert stilled and the sand dunes standing in radiant sentinels in the desert, just as peaceful and quiet as can be? Yes. And Esther, can you visualize all the flowers that you have ever seen in one beautiful cluster being held in your hand? Glorious, perfect, each petal, each blossom, each leaf, absolutely perfect. And Ingeborg, can you visualize the entire 104 acres of the University of Healing here without one stick out of place? That's a little tougher, isn't it? But if you can do that, then you can visualize peace on earth. Then you are really an ordained minister. You are really one who is the creator of your world in whatever beautiful way you'd like to have it be. You see, it's easy for us to all see things that are by nature common and peaceful. The peaceful ocean, the peaceful sand dunes, a peaceful meadow, a peaceful bouquet of flowers with each flower more gorgeous than the other. But to see the ranch, which is Ingeborg's favorite place to go around picking up sticks and taking them to the trash bin, to see that with no more sticks, she'd say, what is there left for me to do? But no, you in your consciousness can see them all in order. And you, in your consciousness, can begin, Ingeborg, can you see the paradise garden green and the little creek running there and all the flowers growing beautifully? Why? Because you have seen it before. And then as winter and summer comes, it changes, but you've seen it before. So you can see it. Barbara has seen the desert, still and peaceful. We've all seen these things. Now, we want to be able to see beyond those things. We want to see peace on earth. which means first there is peace in our heart. And what does peace mean? Peace means no conflict, if you want. Peace means nobody is interested in taking something that doesn't belong to them. Peace means harmony and right action. Peace means joy to the world. Peace means full cooperation with all the rules and principles that are governing our life. As an ordained person, can you live in that consciousness? If you can live in that consciousness, you are not worthy of being ordained, but you are ordained. You are fabulous. Now, do you want to live in that consciousness? And that's what we do here at the Church of God Unlimited. We want to live in that consciousness of peace. No matter what person comes into our world and says anything to us, if they say to us that there is a problem in the world, we say, peace. If they say that there is a terrible fire going on, we say, peace. Don't you run over and help put the fire out? No, you say peace. Your thimble full of water on a fire is not going to do as much good as your mountain full of peace that quells all fires. So, when we learn to say peace, when we learn to live in peace, then our life is wonderful. In this book that we've been reading recently, this medical doctor is been visiting a lot of patients who are dying. And in talking to them, she said what they did was to come to terms with themselves and be at peace. And perhaps it was the first time in their entire life that they were at peace and that they were not rushing to accomplish something. They were able to just say, all right, I let go now. I released myself into my next beautiful experience. I am at peace. I don't have work to do. I don't have books to finish writing. I don't have bookkeeping to take care of. I don't have people to talk to. I don't have my family that I must share my last words with. I am peace. And what would happen if every person who died went in that peace into their next dimension? Do you think they would not have to be reliving the things that they've lived here? They'd be free of all of the distractions, all of the things that have been hurtful to them in any other lifetime. And they'd be moving on to the new dimension. But I will add this right now. All time is now. And that new dimension is right now. That new dimension is going on just as this, as the old dimension is going on, all at the same time. And though you cannot conceive of this possibility, it's an interesting thought. If all time is now, if every dimension is at the same time, then when any one dimension ends, all dimensions end and are completed, and you are free to do something other. And that's interesting too. So be open to that. Be aware of that. Ordination is not the simple thing that it sounds like, where you go and you make your pledge to be your highest and your best and to serve the highest and best that's within you and reach out to humanity and offer them your integrity and your love. That's nice. That's very nice. But an ordination is when you yourself reach out to yourself, to be yourself, because that's what you've always been. And reveal in your world exactly who and what you are. That's a great and a wonderful gift. It's a great and a wonderful blessing. Now, do you want to do that?
Yes.
Sounds nice. Do you want to do that? Herb, what you have been saying right now sounds nothing like ordination that we've ever heard before. Well, it does. It's just that I have taken away all of the outer trimmings and left only the basic fundamental concept. And so what you're doing right now is you're digesting the basic fundamental concept without all the trimming, without all the robes, without all the crosses and all the symbols that represent all the religions. You're looking at the divinity within you in a wonderful, joyous way. I won't say it for the first time, as you've seen it many times, but you're looking at it in a very wonderful and a very personal way. And when you look at a little child, what's the first thing the little child normally gets you to do? Gets you to laugh. You look at the little child, oh, isn't that a wonderful little guy? You know? You're just giggly all over. You're just bubbly all over. You're just warm. Why? Because your divinity is responding to its divinity. You are seeing it from its highest and most beautiful way. And this is true of every child. Whether the child is born screaming and yammering, or whether the child is born dead or alive or whatever, you see this. And then you waken. And why would a child be born dead? Why would a child come into our life and not live? Because it has already done its mission. It's already fulfilled what it intended to do. And what did it intend to do? It intended to be, if only for a moment, or a lifetime, which is but a snap. And we don't want to judge. Because if we are aware of a child that has been here only for a moment or two, we don't want to judge. Our judgment, if such is so, is what a blessing it is to me that I was able to be here in that moment that this young creature came forth into the world. What a blessing to me. What a gift to me I've given to myself. You see? I have many parents who lose children early in their years, and I talk to them like this, sharing with them that child came for a very special purpose into their life for just the short time and brought with it a peace, a love. Hey, cool it. It's not so bad. Take it easy. Don't rush it. Go slow. See you again next time around. Be happy. Be content. And then what happens? We're happy and we're content and everything falls into place. But you see, a minister who is ordained as a minister must have the capacity to look beyond the appearances and see the purity that stands forth there. A minister must have the ability to look at the divinity within every being or every flower. Yes, the minister must be able to look at the flower and see the flower as divinity, because all is divine and all is wonderful and all is who you are and who I am. Now, is this the type of ordination you want? Then I ordain each one of you in this sense, in this concept, in this privilege. And I say to you, go forth and be yourself and have fun. Standard Church says go forth and preach and teach and heal and raise the dead and things like that, and you think to yourself, oh my goodness, do I have a job? Well, you don't. You should go forth and be yourself and have fun. And what would being yourself and having fun be? You would look at every one of your creation as a beautiful person. You would look at every child as a radiant center of light. You would look at every parent as the searchlight itself reaching out and shining upon all the world, not only its own children, because a mother doesn't only shine upon her own children. She shines upon the neighbor children. She shines upon the children that are in areas that they don't even know. They might even be telling stories to their children about people who are not as blessed as they are. And if in telling the story, her own children can say, but Mom, we don't need all the toys we have. Let's take it to some people who don't have so many. Now, we would say, why do you want to do that? Does that make you feel good? Or does that make them feel good? Or why do you want to do that? Why do you want to take your toys and give it to some people who might not have so many? Because they don't have any. Because they don't have any toys. Not the ulterior reason. Well, because that's what being a good person is. That's what doing this is. That's, no. Just the objective concept for a child's mind, they don't have it. Let's give it to them. I don't need it. And then you take the toys over and you give it to this family that doesn't have it. Oh, we don't want charity. We don't. Hey, it's not charity. My child was so happy thinking that he could share with your child what he has that he wanted to share it with your child and give it to you. And the other parent says, oh, okay, thank you very much. Thank you. You see, we want everyone to have their feeling of sense of self-worth, their sense of dignity. And we cannot give them or help them to maintain their sense of self-worth or dignity if they feel they're getting charity. Because the minute they get charity, they get hard-hearted. And then they can take anything from welfare or anything else like that. But when they feel that they have received this through love, they receive this because of someone who cares, then it makes all the difference in the world. And it makes all the difference to them in the world. So let us be careful how we give our gifts. I only give a gift that I thoroughly enjoy. And if anyone else enjoys it, not my problem. I give it because I love it. And sure enough, other people love it too. And you know, this doctor tells about her remembrances of her grandfather who died when she was 6. And she says, of all the things that I kept the thing that meant the most to me. And then she pointed out it was something like a leaf or something that her grandfather had explained to her and had given to her, and she took it, and it spoke to her because it was him. It wasn't the gold watch that he had, and it wasn't the diamonds and rubies and other beautiful, expensive things, but it was something that spoke to her heart. It spoke to her dignity. It spoke to her integrity. It spoke to her sincerity. Now, are you ready for such a giving and receiving in your life? Then you are ready to be ordained. You are ready to be ordained as a minister of the Church of God Unlimited, where God is unlimited in each one of us to be all that we are interested in being. So, my beloveds, I love you, and we will come back in a few moments, and we will talk about what is a minister. So until then, I love you, I love you, I love you.